Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear. And it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight.
So welcome everybody to the first Macklin's Take of 2023. Quite unusually though, it's a Macklin's Take without Macklin. He's not managed to make it for the first offering of the new year. So Spencer Oliver, you are Matthew Macklin. How does that feel?
Well, yeah, it's all right actually. It doesn't feel too bad. Yeah, we'll make it work, don't worry.
We will make it work. He has been caught filming a little bit later than he thought, and he also has a pregnant wife to take care of as well. So I wasn't going to argue when he sent me a message a few minutes ago saying that he couldn't get here on time. It is rude, though, because his former trainer, a man he looks up to enormously, has joined us, Joe Gallagher. Joe, what do you make of that from Macklin?
Poor form, isn't it, mate? Poor form. Like, listen, you know what it's like. It's fight week. It's a Friday night. Traffic where he's at is a nightmare. So, yeah, it's understandable. And he's got to look after his pregnant lady.
Mate, I must say, I only jumped in here because when Joe walked through the door, so this is how the conversation went, Joe, before you walked through the door, he's like, Andy was like, oh, I can't believe this. He's let me down. He sent me a text. He's still away filming. Joe's going to come through the door any minute now. And I'm like, he's walking through, mate. I was like, it's going to be really awkward for you, this is. And then to see your face when he said, he's let us down. You was like, nah, mate, I've just come from the airport. He can't do that. I was like, I'm going to have to jump in. I'm going to have to jump in. So, yeah.
Well, my commentary partner on TalkSport has jumped in and saved me, which is great. So anyway, we're basically just going to have a look ahead to 2023 and see what we expect. Not necessarily in terms of individual fights, but just in terms of how the landscape is looking. Me and Matt have kind of done this every now and again, but we've talked mainly about kind of promoters and networks and stuff like that. But just in general, and we talked about this yesterday at the press conference, Joe, how healthy is the sport, do you think, at the minute? And how important is 2023?
How healthy is the sport? Well, it isn't as... People say, well, we have stadium fights now, we have this platforms and 2 million tune into female boxing. Yeah, it's all great. But the best ain't fighting the best. And when you look back to an era when we were growing up, or the Four Kings fighting each other, and then you got to an era, even the De La Hoya era, he fought five times in a year, the Moses, the Trinidads, Hopkins, all them were all fighting one each other. I do feel we're going into 2023. Listen, there was huge news made about the Misfit show in London last week, turn up at the Rainer at 6 o'clock, packed out to the end. And I think boxing this year really has to pull its socks up. It was a shame last year we had the black cloud of the Conor Benn failed drug test, two drug tests. And as far as I heard, he's still not asked for the B sample. So that's still lingering going into 2023. And it's boxing's great when we get it right, but we're our own worst victims. We damage the sport ourselves with things like that. But I think with 2023, fights have to be made now against best v the best. It's very good to see. You see Catra-Taylor rematch happening. There's talk about Inoue versus Steve Fulton Jr., Lomachenko versus Devin Haney, Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk. And people used to say the health of the sport usually is how good the heavyweight division is. Now we've got to get a chance for being the undisputed champion, and hopefully that should kick on then and the rest of the fights be made. But I think where people say YouTubers and fighters are catching up is the fights are being made and they're fighting regular and often, and I don't think the champions these days aren't fighting enough. It's once a year, twice a year, and I think boxing really this year nearly has to pull itself its socks up, because when we do it right and get it right, it's brilliant, but we just need more nights of them.
How big, Spence, do you think that Fury-Usyk fight is in terms of it being actually made? Because I look at that and I was so confident about that at the end of last year, and I still am, but the reason I was because of the people involved. Queensbury and Top Rank work together and with great success, and they know K2, they all know each other, everybody in the room knows each other, they all strike you as kind of sensible. Surely it's going to get done, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's massive for the sport. We need it to happen. You know, with the letdowns, you know, that Joe said there, you know, the letdowns we got in 2022, 2021, going back like probably 3 years now, you know, we've been looking for that undisputed heavyweight champion. Heavyweight is not just the pinnacle of boxing, it's the pinnacle of sport. And we need that undisputed champion. And, I think we get it. I think that it's going to be a bit later than we wanted. I think originally they was talking about March the 4th, then they pushed back to March the 17th. I know Tyson Fury was injured after his last fight. He had a bad elbow. Perhaps that's got something to do with it, needs a bit more recovery time. But I believe the fight happens. I think we get it in April. But there's no reason, Andy, that we don't get it, like you say, because of the parties that are involved. I think it's a fight we see. I actually think 2023 is going to be a good year for boxing, because Joe's right in what he says. You know, the sport needs a good year. There's been too much politics involved, fights not happening. You know, you go into other sports and these fights do happen. You know, the UFC stars, the best fight the best. And he's right in what he says about the YouTubers. You know, a lot of the YouTubers slag, or a lot of people slag the YouTube boxing off. But what I'm doing is, you go there. We worked on a show last week, the Misfits show, KSI Boxing. The people that go there, the younger generation that go there, go to see their YouTube stars. They're using boxing as the umbrella. But, you know, the standard, take Jake Paul, Logan Paul, KSI out of the equation. They're all not bad. They're a bad little standard. But take them out of that. And the standard's pretty poor. We've seen that. But it's like boxing slash entertainment. That's what it is. We got there, 7 o'clock, 13,000 people in the arena waiting to see the first fight. It was a carnival atmosphere. The demographic was different. You know, like I say, they were there to see their YouTube stars. But it was great. So you can't knock what they're doing there, because they're using boxing as it. And, you know, I've heard people saying, you know, it's making a mockery of our sport. Our sport's making a mockery of our sport, because the best are not fighting the best. And I agree with Joe 100%. You know, you go back to the 70s. You know, the era of the heavyweights, when you had Ali, Foreman, Frazier and all those guys. The best fought the best. And that's what happened. And that's what makes memorable eras. And we're not getting that at the moment. You know, all we're getting is frustrations. You know, fights falling through politics, different broadcasters, different promoters. We need that. The sport needs it this year.
What do you think? People will probably be quite surprised to hear us talking about Misfits Boxing on Macklin's tape, but it's worth talking about it. Joe, what do you think that boxing can and maybe should learn from what they're doing? It's a different space. I don't regard it as proper boxing. As Spencer said, they're using boxing as a vehicle, but you can't ever, as a sport or any industry, just think, no, the way we do it's brilliant. We do it right. We've always done it right. Nothing to learn here. Is there anything you see that they're doing in terms of their marketing and what the individuals are doing that fighters need to learn from?
I think I've seen statistics recently of the 14, 15-year-olds to the 18-year-old. I think it's up to 21-year-olds who actually watch boxing, and it's very poor. They're more into watching UFC. as you said, the Misfits boxing, KSI, Logan Paul, we've lost that connection. When we were all growing up, we could watch Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, Marvin Hagler, all them, then Mike Tyson and everything else. So we were in a boxing gym 15, 16, that's our next idol. That hasn't really, really happened. And it shows that the people that are watching boxing now are people in the late 30s and 40s. Well, that's basically, well, I'm 50s now, but that's basically that one that was in the Kawasaki and Nazim era. That, but we need a Kawasaki and Nazim. Now we've got Azeed Ahmed, who's been the big push now for Sky, but we need more of them to get people excited about it. But I think we've lost the way. I think
we captured the younger generation. No, no, it's the same people are watching boxing that were boxing, like yourself and myself, that Mike Tyson got us all into boxing. We'd get up and listen to him on the radio and sit there at 5 a.m. to listen to him knock out like Michael Spinks in 90 seconds. But it was that, it was something really special about it, something really electric about it, and it captured the imagination of the world. And we've not moved on with that. It's the same people watching boxing now, and I agree with Joe. You know, we need to capture the younger generation. How do you do that? Put the good cards on. Yeah. Let the best fight the best. Yeah. You know, don't just give people, like you go to some of our shows and you see them and you go, right, I get that fighters have got to develop, so they need to box certain standards of fighters, journeymen or whatever, but they need to progress and just make fights a little more even and make it more showbiz.
I think we all slept on YouTube. I think we all slept on YouTube. I think TV these days, the only one that watches TV, the young generation, is just for live sport. Everything's on YouTube. They go on YouTube and watch on YouTube, and you see people like KSA, Paulo, and get the following on there and everything else, because they're not watching TV, normal TV that we watch. They're on over, so that's what they know. That's what they know, boxing. That's what they see. And KSI started off playing FIFA or whatever it was and smashing up the computers, and here he is, a huge name now, Lamborghinis and songs, and now selling out Misfits. So that's the generation. I think boxing, we sort of like dismissed it too much, but that's where the captive audience was. That's influencing this next generation that's coming through, and I think we've got to get back in touch. And maybe, like you say, it isn't a conversation to have, but people go there, it's three rounds, whatever it is, and it's over, and then they're on to the next one, and it's over, and it's on to the next one. And sometimes people come to the arena, and it's like six rounds watching someone just go through the motions, on board, should we go and get a drink? So they're not, it's like the UFC, you sit down and you see all good fights. So I think there's tweaks that can be made. I think there really is. I don't know, I can't say promoters have got lazy, because promoters back then invited the local TV, local radio into gymnasium, local newspapers, but no one has newspapers now, everything's online. And I just think
I feel it's just maybe not moved with the times, you know, like the world has changed massively. You know, YouTube is a big part of it. My daughter was the same, grew up watching YouTube. She didn't watch Coronation Street, EastEnders, like we all did, you know, regular TV. Like, she don't really do that. So I think that maybe what boxing needs to take something from that, and take, that's what they take from the YouTube stars, that they need to jazz it up a little bit and maybe move with the times. I don't know how it's done, because we're just having this conversation, but I think it's,
I do think
if
the best fight the best. Okay, so you had Hearns and Leonard. I think one was 23, one the other one 25 at the time, fighting undisputed. You had Donald Currie, Milton Crawley, undisputed, fighting each other at young age. We've got Errol Spence and Terence Crawford in the 30s, and it's still not happened. That's got to be another Mayweather Pacquiao. It's too late, and they've got a cash and grab. I do also think a little bit as well, I think that the champions are the ones that have been paid the most money. They're not fighting regular or enough. They're just taking the money and not putting back into the sport. You mentioned there, the 70s, Larry Holmes, he did most of his fight Witherspoon, then it was Doakes, and then Ken Norton, and everyone. Mike Tyson, even his time, was fighting Pinklin Thomas, Bone Crusher Smith. Do you know what I mean? Just kept them busy and active, but I think, not digging up, but Anthony Joshua's fought 5-6 times in 5 years. That's not enough, Andy, is it? Yeah. Do you understand? It's just not enough. And if he was on the screens more, people wouldn't drift away from the sport.
So who needs to take responsibility for that? Is it more in the hands of the networks? Because we kind of eulogise on this podcast quite often about HBO, and we talked to Mark Taffert before Christmas. Is it the networks who need to be stronger with the promoters? Well, not just the promoters, but with managers as well. So when fights are proposed and they say, oh, we asked him to fight this guy, but they said they didn't really want it. And you say, well, fuck what they want. You need to fight this guy or you're not fighting. It's as simple as that, because in the HBO days there were examples of unified champions vacating titles because HBO would not accept their mandatory as being of acceptable standard. Do we need to get back to something
absolutely
like that?
Absolutely. I think that's definitely part of it. I think that's definitely where we need to go, and they need to look at that, and maybe the networks, the broadcasters need to be firmer. you know, to make these fights so that we, you know, so we do get the fights that we want to see. But also, I think the promoters need to see the vision and move with the times as well. You know, it's like we're living in a world now where things are becoming more show busy. You know, it's becoming more entertainment. Yes, of course, real fight fans will want just the boxing. We understand that, but there has to be a little bit of glitz and glamour to it as well. So I think it's collectively across the board, we need to move forward. Like, you know, with not just the promoters, the broadcasters need to play a big part in that as well, and be a little bit firmer and demand some of the fights we do. Maybe the governing bodies as well need to be a bit firmer on stuff. You know, maybe we need to change things up. You know, because there's so much leeway, so much politics involved with different governing bodies. You know, mandatories. I mean, let's use Dillian White as an example. He was there 3 fucking years as a mandatory. Like, how does that work? Do you know what I mean? Where's the loopholes in all that? Like, that's what I'm saying. I think it just needs a facelift, if I'm honest.
Touching what you said there regarding the promoters and the money in the network, I just don't think the money is being filtered down. I think the very top are getting the money and it's not filtered down. I know fighters now that are fighting British title money, and it was the same British title money in the early 90s. Yeah, inflation and everything's going up. But no promoters are saying, hypothetically, oh, that British title fight now, it isn't 20, 25 grand, it's 40, 45, a European 70, 80 is now 120. They're not, it's still capped. Mm. So people have got expenses and inflation's rising. And like we say, it's a license for illegal killing, do you understand? And it's like you say there, oh, that fight isn't made. No, it isn't. But because you've given the top of the bill so much, the crumbs are on the undercard, so you can't get a gun at an undercard because no one's willing to put it online. But if you took a bit more off the top and said to people at the top, like I think I mentioned it to Matthew earlier on today, and you turn around and you said, well, listen, we want that fight and that fight, and you go to the management company and they turn around and say, no, we're not taking him, and I say, well, that's the second opponent we've offered you, so that's it, you're not on the bill. And then all of a sudden, go, do you mean you're on the bill, you can't do that? Yeah, we can. Do you know what I mean? The tail's not wagging the dog here. We're the corporation. We're the ones with the money, and this is what we want to see. If you can't deliver it, or that agency doesn't want to fight, or that fight, they won't let that management company fight him, then that's it. And we'll go with people who will. And soon people's attitude will change because they dance to the tune now, but they're not dancing to the tune. Their tail's wagging the dog.
So a different kind of scenario. Let's say you've got a fighter who does want to fight regularly. As a trainer and manager, how easy or difficult is that now to achieve? Because people say, oh, it's a great time to be a fighter because we've got lots of different platforms and different promoters. But the problem with that is that you're generally speaking going to be tied to one. You can't dance around and jump around from camp to camp and fight whenever you feel like it. And no, they only have a certain number of dates.
Yeah, but the amount of fighters has grown as well, Andy. You know, like, you know, you're talking about that fighters do want to fight regularly and they, you know, they want to get onto these big platforms and stuff. But if you go to the amateur gyms now, to when I was boxing back in the 90s, then you look at 2012 was a massive turnaround for British boxing, I believe. And you go into the gyms now, and then obviously with the involvement now of women's boxing and how that's evolved over the last few years, you go in the gyms, and Joe, you must see it in your gyms, you know, in Manchester as a whole. You go into the gyms, and it is packed with fighters. So out of that, you know, the development of fighters is getting bigger and bigger, so the gyms are busier. And
that's great.
Oh, it's fantastic, but it's also frustrating for the fighters but
the thing with it is, Spence, as you say, Andy, to get on these big shows, listen, I'm always mithering, whether it be Frank Warren or Ben Shalom, to get kids on the bill. There's only so many slots in them shows. Mm. But I'll give you an example. I've got told to Steve Woods, VIP promotion. He's putting on 19 shows this year. 19 small hall shows. I think Kevin Marie's doing 10. But that's 19 small shows. But if a fighter wants to stay regular and often, that's 6-7 fights a year, which I want for 2 of my kids this year coming through. But you've got to sell tickets 6-7 times. You've got to keep going same people same times. But when you're only just breaking even, as it, so you've got to pay for the opponent. The promoter wants a part in a small hall. And you come out with just a couple of £100, possibly. You soon get tired of that. You're thinking, I'm getting bashed up and training for a few hundred quid. And then your manager or your trainer or whatever says, oh, I'll push and I'll try and get you on. Because, you know, the TV, you get on, you get a bit more money and everything else, and it's worthwhile for it. But when sometimes you're just on small hall, and you're not being given an opportunity, and there is good fighters out there. And like I said to you, I do feel sometimes too much money is thrown at some people, and they're rigid in the contracts. And I just think to myself, and then they play prima donnas and don't want to fight this one. Well, there's a load of kids in small hall shows will jump at the chance of what a fight of it and put on good fights, you understand? And I think that's what they've really got to do a little bit more, do you know what I mean? Open up and let these young kids come through and fight an undercard. Save two slots for kids that aren't. And they do, fair play to it. Some of them do. I think Frank Warren's done very well over the last couple of years. He's gone out, he's signed ABA champions, ABA runners-up, boys club champions, junior ABA champions. He just signed the 18-year-old Moses. And it's like, he's on it. He's on it. He didn't go for all the Olympians, do you know what I mean? And that's what some of the older have to do. But like I say, it's very hard boxing. It's very hard. These small horse shows everywhere, all the time, try to fight six times a year, try to get above rankings on the promise that you might get a TV slot so people could see you. Because what happens when you first turn, which you turn pro, and everyone wants to come watch you fight. Mm. So you do a good amount. But you get to the third one and they say, who are you fighting? And you say, oh, a six round against someone. Come back to us when you're in a decent fight, do you understand? And when you're on an undercard to a big show, say like this weekend, that's easy to sell tickets. All of a sudden you're selling tickets, you're on a commission.
It doesn't matter who the opponent is, but I get it, Joe. Yeah, people do.
It's very hard.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear you both talk about that, because a while ago people were saying to me there's not too many promoters or too much TV, you can't really have too much of it, but there weren't enough fighters. But you seem to think really there are too many.
Listen, if you go to the grassroots of our sport, go into any gym now, and you look at the volume of people in those gyms, some of them don't ever become boxers, but they all go there with a little taste of it, and some of them develop into great boxers. But if you look at the volume, yeah, it's increasing massively. You know, it's increasing massively. So the sport is in a healthy position there, but there's just little chinks that needs ironing out. We need to start pushing on. We need to start developing the sport as a whole a little bit more.
Hey kids. Hey, everybody. Sitting here with a famous Slovenian philosopher. How are you doing, sir?
I am in health, thank you.
Are you excited about something?
I am excited about this latest CIA-funded venture.
A CIA venture?
Yes. It's called the Desire and Capital Podcast.
Oh, what is it about?
I refuse your fascist question.
Well, there you have it. Listen to the Desire and Capital Podcast, coming soon to a bourgeois platform near you. On your marks, get set, go!
One thing I found really interesting last year was I think we all really enjoyed the all-female show in October at the O2. It was a great showcase. You're not going to be able to put on too many of them because at the minute the depth isn't quite there. That will change. But one thing I noticed about that night, and I've noticed it more broadly across kind of other sports, is that we talk about a new audience and a younger audience. I think that women's boxing can pull in a new kind of audience, because I noticed this when I covered the Paralympics back in 2012. Everything was packed out every day because it was full of people who saw what happened with the Olympics, didn't have tickets for that, had never really been to sport before, but saw that and thought, I want to go. And I think now, out of the back of COVID, there are loads of parents particularly out there who want to get their kids into something, and they want to get them off the couch, they want to get them away from screens, they want to take them to sport. But my theory is they're intimidated by men's professional football, because you would be, to be honest, going to football if it's not you and you haven't been there all the time. They're maybe a bit intimidated by men's professional boxing, by the crowd around it. Women's boxing, it's just got that slightly different feel to it. Mm. The O2 that night, it was different, wasn't it? It was different to a normal show. I mean, do you follow me on this one?
Absolutely. I think the boxing's moved on, as in where we've gone to these stadium fights, and you know, now we get regular AO arenas like we've got on Saturday night, where you get an incredible atmosphere, and the O2 arena is the same down south. I think that has become more glamorous. I think that, you know, like, you know, it's become more of an event as opposed to a boxing spectacle, do you know what I'm saying? But then you've got the other end of it, like Joe says, where you're filling sports halls and putting these kids on and they've got to sell tickets and they come out of a couple of £100. That's fucking disheartening, mate, you know, because you go through... It's not the fight where people just see the fight, don't they? But, like, if you see the shit that they go through in the gym, getting up every morning, running, cutting weight, training in the afternoon, sleeping, getting up in the morning, running, cutting my, it's fucking, it's not easy, mate. It's really, really hard. And if you feel like you're not really progressing because you're not really doing anything. You're just boxing on these small hall shows where it's only, you know, a few hundred people that are watching you box. You're getting no coverage, so you're not really growing your profile. It's difficult, mate. It really is, man. Going through the development stage of boxing is a difficult thing. People, you know, the casuals only see what goes on TV and they see the glamorous shows and everything else, but the other end of it, mate, is fucking tough, and that's where we lose a lot of talent because they don't get the right opportunity. Boxing's all about opportunity.
As you say, as well as them doing all that, a lot of them people work full-time jobs, whether on a building site. Hod County, you got Jack Massey this weekend that was on a scaffolding, doing scaffolding not long ago. That's what I mean. They just need that break. But as far as the girls are concerned and the females boxing, I agree. All you've got to do is look at what the Lionesses have done, and they've kicked on. But we've had that huge event. All right, and we can't stage a huge event like that again. But why don't we do what we used to do, a prospect show or a Friday night leisure centre show for the females, so it's on and they're there and they're visually there. What we can't have in this era, years ago, there was a bit of a good era of female boxing, Leila Ali, Christine Martin, Anna Wolf, all them type of fighters. And then all of a sudden it died and now it's come back again and we really need, now it's here to stay. And for it to stay, is it for it to be seen? So every now and again, the Tasha will fight on a show and then there'll be the huge women's show or a Katie Taylor show. But why don't we, or whoever, a TV platform of sorts, like you see, them Lionesses and that women's football, they've got a TV and there's a platform for them and they're being seen and that's all they want to do. I hear Natasha all saying, if it's popular, there's a demand for it, but we just want to be seen. And it was great to be seen, but we can't say, well, we've done that now, let's move on. Well, let's invest and just do, got leisure centres, we can't pack out O2s. I don't sure think it'd be that day, do you know what I mean? Leisure centre, fill it up, 1,000 people in there, female fights, 6 female fights, and Next Gen's a platform for people to tune in that want to watch female boxing.
So there's your vision right there. That's what we're talking about when we say we need change. We do need to do something because it becomes very easy to just continue doing the same thing and then all of a sudden you think, fuck, we're in 2023. We're doing the same shit as we was doing in 2000. So, you know, that's when we're talking about needing a vision and things need tweaking and changing, Joe's just hit it on the nail on the head there. Just by saying that, I just sort of, it opens your mind and go, that's exactly what we need, something fresh, something new.
Because boxing, all you used to, I wouldn't say always, but we're in era of leisure centres and great fights in leisure centres all over at a time on Sky. And then we came big stadiums. But I feel like for women's, and there was the prospect show, the old school. I think Michael Pass stood in the ring with a cap on and all that. But it gave them a platform. And maybe if we could have, I remember years ago, I think HBO, they had HBO Boxing, HBO After Dark, blah, blah, they had Top Rank, they had everything. And I think it's great having these guys Saturday nights. But let's invest in, like, once a month, a prospect show for the females.
I agree. I totally agree with that.
I'm 100% with you on this. And me and Macklin were talking about this just recently, actually, because you've hit on what I think has become a problem, which is a kind of, all promoters are doing it, and it's a snobbery around venues. Everybody wants, it would seem that people would rather go to the O2 with hardly anybody there than ram out York Hall. One of the best fight nights I've done this year was Denzel Bentley against Marcus Morrison and then absolutely banged out York Hall. It was a tremendous atmosphere. And we've signed up to a load of small hall shows to commentate on. And they'll mainly be at York Hall. And there'll be area title fights and English title fights. And they will be absolutely packed. But at the minute, like Joe says, no one seems to want to do that because they think that it's kind of admitting defeat somehow. It's weird, isn't it?
It's not, mate. It's not. That's the point. It's that's where you've got to have a beginning to get to the middle, to get to the end. And the end, obviously, the ultimate goal is to get to the big shows, be topping the bills at the big shows. But there's no reason why the small hall shows shouldn't really be brilliant. And like, if you go to the York Hall, you know, Joe, you've been there millions of times before. You go to the York Hall when it's packed out, and there's something special about that place that everybody seems to fight like it's their last fight. And they just put on, like, I mean, some of the shows that we've done recently down there, I just go, fucking, this is insane. Like, and it's getting no coverage. No, they're getting a little live stream where you might have a few thousand people on. Yeah. And you just think, this is where the problem might lie. Like, because I agree with Joe, if they've done an After Dark show or whatever, they could take those shows, give these people some form of platform, and that will allow people to develop and do. Do you know what I mean?
They yeah, won't lose. That, you've got that ladder then. You've got a ladder.
Absolutely.
Like, and not only that, the other females, the 2 minute rounds, six twos isn't that long. Do you know what I mean? You can have an hour, 2 hour show. Do you know what I'm saying? Don't have to be a whole Saturday night, but yeah. 2 hour show will have three or four fights on it and things will be on a stream before it. But if you look back years ago, there was York Hall, there was Everton Park Sports Centre, there was Robin Park Arena, Altrincham Leisure Centre. There's some great venues up and down the country where people can go and watch the boxing and have a good night out without. Like you say, there's nothing worse fighting on a venue and it's half, four, five, six in the evening. No one's there. You'd rather have that fight in a leisure centre when everyone is there cheering and supporting.
Yeah, I agree. Spencer, we're going to have to let you go. You rode into the rescue at very short notice.
I did, mate.
Absolute off to the sunset now you are.
Yeah, do you know what? It's not as glitz and glamour as you think, mate. I'm going to pick my wife up, actually, from the station because she's come up. By the way, guys.
Macklin's used that line in the business.
I know.
Are you feeling something going on with you here now?
No, don't worry. We still love you, mate. But do you know what? This is how I can tell you what a good... Before I go, I want to say what a great show we have on Saturday night, right? Because box office shows, normally you've got a great main event and maybe a good chief support. Mate, you go through this card and it's stacked. Everything's good. There's 50-50 fights on there.
Congo also manages to stand out on the card.
Oh, it really is, mate. It really is. You know, and
that's what we want.
Yeah, and I want to see Jack Massey and like his story for the last 12 months, what he's been through, the turmoil in his family, how it's driven him on, and he's got this opportunity coming from being a scaffolding over Christmas. Like, I mean, his story is insane. We had him on our podcast. It's just absolutely mad. And you go, it's all about opportunity, and he's got that opportunity against Parker. We don't know what that fight with Joe Joyce took out of him, so it makes it an interesting fight. And you go through the card like that, and I go, like, for Nicola to say, I want to come to Manchester and go to a boxing show, this is where I was getting with it, I go, fuck, this must be a better show than I originally thought. Do you know what I mean? Because she's one of those girls that likes to go to shows where that are, it's like more of a, oh yeah, I want to be there, it's Anthony Joshua's boxing, or it's just an event. Do you know what I mean? But this is like, fucking, this is a great card, mate.
Was she at Misfits last week?
No, she didn't go Misfits.
Seen
mate.
Holly Willoughby. Was
I
there.
Was
straight away seeing Holly Willoughby there. It's mate, like,
do you know who was there?
That's the appeal.
Yeah,
Louis Theroux was there.
Louis Theroux was there. Yeah,
Krishna Guru Murthy from Channel 4 News was there.
Let's not forget Katie Price, mate. She was involved in the broadcast for a while.
She was right. Yeah, she was right in front of us.
She was there.
Right in front of us.
Yeah, it's just mad, Joe. It's like, but I. The reason I'm not slagging YouTube boxing, obviously, because they're capturing an audience, and I think that... I had a great conversation with KSI, actually, and I said to him, you know, what's it all about? Is it a business for you? Is it a long-term thing? He said, look, I don't know where it goes. I want to fight again in the summer, and I want to fight Jake Paul, and that's where it could end for me. But we've signed a 5-year deal with Misfits, 30 shows, and I want to develop some of these guys. Let me tell you, Spence, what this is all about. Obviously, he's getting well paid to do it. That's ultimately number one, and that's what they do, and they're very good at generating money. He said, but I know that I've got millions of kids, 50 million followers. I've got millions of kids that follow me, and I inspire them and everything else. And I know that boxing teaches life skills, and I know by me boxing, some of those kids are going to go to boxing gyms, and some of them actually might find a hidden talent and develop into fighters. Mm-hmm. He goes, and so it's a win-win, surely. And I went, yeah, I get it, because, you know, all the people that go, oh, fuck that. No, you know, they're there for their YouTube stars. They're not going to box. Out of 50 million people that follow him, one or two are going to want to sample that. And if we get one fighter that comes out of it and ends up quite good, then it's a win-win, surely.
Yeah, and also, as we know, it's great when you get... When you get kids going to gyms and becoming champions, but it's not really about that. It's about getting
skills.
Them in there.
It's
about
the
getting them
skills,
in there,
mate.
And maybe their self-esteem isn't great, and you know, mm-hmm. they walk in there and they're a bit shy, and there's all sorts of things
they
that could be going on. And
do you know what I mean? The discipline, the self-respect, to say please, to say thank you, to fucking tidy up, to, you know what I mean, clean up after themselves, all of that shit. You leave some, you leave a pair of gloves on the side of the ring, mate. Get your gloves, mate. You didn't find them there, did you? Do you know what I mean? And that develops them as a person. So, yeah.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. It does. So, we're not going to have the...
On that little rant, mate, I'm going to have to go.
Okay, hand
listen,
us the...
Thanks so much, Joe.
Good to see you. We'll catch you tomorrow.
Night.
And just hand us that mic. And I'll keep my eye out if anybody else is roaming past. But we can make do the two of us, me and Joe, without any problem at all. And actually, a subject I was going to get onto, which it's probably fairer on Spencer if he wasn't part of the discussion because he knows him, is AJ. I'm really interested to see what's going to happen with him for the rest of his career, really, because he's been this huge force in British sport. He's been amazing for the sport. You see how he's lifted it and the attention he's brought to it and the benefits that other people have reaped from his career and his success in so many different ways. But he's had a difficult time in the last few years. He's not boxed much, as you mentioned, and he's lost three of his last five. They've got to rehabilitate him. You'll have been watching him look for a new trainer, and I know you may have thrown your hat in the ring at some point, I don't know, but what do you see when you look at...
Hey everybody, this is MotoG Pete from the Noco Moto Motorcycle Podcast. Join us every week while we rate, review, ride, philosophize, and generally obsess over every single motorcycle make, model, and style that could possibly exist, plus news and racing. That's the Noco Moto Motorcycle Podcast from Moto One Podcast Network Studios.
Him now.
I don't know whether the... Everyone tells me in and around him he's got a great work ethic. He wants to learn. He's thirsty for knowledge. And he wants to better himself. But I do feel sometimes the politics within boxing, the reason why he isn't fighting regular or often, I don't know. But is it a case of he's got too much money now? And there's no rush for him to fight this one or fight that one. I think AJ's come up to... Is he 32, 33, something like that? Listen, he's still got a few years left at him. But he was one belt away from being undisputed. He lost to Usyk twice. There's no shame in it. But now he's gone off and got another trainer. He's over there with Derek James in America. And then when you start hearing talks of reports of, yeah, AJ's got to come back and have a warm-up, and then he's got to fight Dylan. Just stop there. Why are we having a warm-up for Dylan White? Dylan White's a fighter that... Safe to say, I think it's past his best. Not over it, but past his best. He's been knocked out twice in his last four or five fights. And you beat him before. Why are you trying to... And this is half the problem, what's happening, why the YouTube boxing's happening, and this isn't happening. So AJ's back, great, brilliant. Who's he fighting? Well, the word on the street is Dempsey McKean, everyone's singing. But the thing with it, is it, with Dempsey McKean is who knows him? What's it for? It's a money-making exercise again. What's that undercard got to look like? Then you're going to go to London with Dylan White. Well, how's that got to sell in London? There'll be the beef, there'll be playback of the first fight, but like I said somewhere else today as well, what a big London fight. Fight Joe Joyce. That's a good fight. Fight Daniel Dubois. That's a good London fight. There's fights there to be made for him, and I think... Now he's gone over to America, he's in a gymnasium, he's got loads of money, he can afford any sparring partners wants. He doesn't need that warm-up for Dylan White. He should be straight back in fighting someone in the top 10, from 5 to 10 at least, make a statement and go, wow, I'm back. Right, who's next? I want the winner of Joshua and Usyk. And put himself straight in the mix. Not this three-fight plan to get him back. We're talking about a former unified world champion having a 2-3 fight plan to get back into the mix. He's 32, 33 years of age. He's with a great trainer with McCracken. He's been in a camp with Garcia. It's like I just feel that's you're conning the public and you're milking it, and it's, I think that's half the problem with boxing now. And I think it, and people say, oh, but Tyson fought this one. But Tyson came back from mental health. Yeah, and he did have one or two of them fights. But he's fought Deontay Wilder three times. And now he's going fighting Alexander Usyk. Do you know what I mean? And he's trying to keep himself busy.
Do you think it's a good move, though, that he's made? Do you think Derek James is a good choice? Do you think America's a good thing? I remember talking to you a while ago, me and Matt, on the podcast, I think, and you were saying that, I think at that point he was kind of, it might have been when he was leaving Rob, or the rumour was that he was leaving Rob McCracken, and you were saying that what you wanted to see him do was go and train in a pro gym where he's one of a number of pros. Yeah. And some of the rest of them are really successful pros who are on his level, and get out away from home comforts and, you know, make that commitment. And he's gonna do that.
Yeah. He's going out there, James. I think it's Errol Spence, and one of the Charlos is in there as well. So he's around a winning environment. The trainers had good success. He was ring trainer of the year, I think 2018, 2019, something like that. So he's in there, but he's going there, but he's still bringing people with him from the old setup. Does that make sense? It's like, you left McCracken, and then you've gone Garcia and It's just, but you've still got the same people all the time. And as much as Garcia tried to make an influence, and I'm sure James has most returned and said, well, this is how it goes, do you understand? We'll just have to see. But them saying he needs a new fight with his new trainer, Matthew Macklin, I'll tell you, my first fight with Matthew Macklin was for the British title against Wayne Elcock. And if Matthew didn't win, his career was over. Scott Quigg's first fight with me was for the British title against Jason Booth. So we went in the deep end, and if you've got it, you've got the quality like Anthony Joshua was, you should be able to do that. But he's taking himself abroad now. It's just disappointing. This country's got so many good trainers, and the feel and the need that they have to go abroad is a shame. Do you understand? We've got very good trainers in this country, and I don't know whether how the relationship ended with McCracken, but maybe he could have bought his own gym, set up a gym down there somewhere in London, and said to Rob, do you want to come down whatever couple of days a week? But I know he's got commitments with GB, but listen, that's it. He's got all the money to do whatever he wants now, Anthony Joshua, so that's how he is, isn't he?
Staying with the heavyweights, assuming this fight between Fury and Usyk does get made, what are you thinking with regard to that? Because Usyk is a very hard man to write off in any fight, but in Fury he's got somebody who possibly matches him skill wise or matches up skill wise closer than any other heavyweight would, and who is also on the night will probably be about 50 pounds heavier.
Yeah, I think as Usyk, his mindset, unbelievable mindset. The fact, if you look at his resume, he goes abroad, fights fighters in his own back garden and wins world titles on the road. Doesn't faze him. You've seen him jump up on the ring apron there at Spurs there at the end of the year when Tyson Fury won, had the eyeball, didn't blink, didn't flicker, and his huge self-belief. Tyson Fury, listen, he's a great heavyweight, good mover. We've seen with Wilder on the front foot, and then on the back foot, like we've seen against Klitschko, has a bit of it all. I think the fight could turn into a bit of a Holyfield-Riddick Bowe type of fight, that if Usyk thinks to himself, no, I'm not running from you, I've got to sit in the pocket with you, and because land some shots, because every now and again Tyson will throw some shots but looks for the hold, and Usyk might try and take advantage of that and get to work inside. Whether he's brave enough to take Tyson's power to get into that pocket remains to be seen, or it could easily be a cat and mouse fight. Do you know what I mean? Tyson, as you see, he likes to poke and poke, and when he feels he's got him, then he'll let the backhand and the third shots go and then smother and push and hold and make his weight weaken Usyk's legs. You see Usyk when he's putting the pressure with Joshua, only one or two times, he's like on the ropes, took one or two, but he was gone straight away. He's not got to sit there and allowed to be hit. But Usyk could be looking to counterpunch Tyson Fury and walk. It's a fascinating fight. It really is a boxing connoisseur's fight.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope we get some news on it relatively soon. You'd have thought it'll probably be in Saudi Arabia, wouldn't you?
Yo, I'm DK, co-host of the One Star Recruits podcast. My best friend Rip and I host five-star athletes, celebs, business leaders, comedians, and coaches from around the world. Each week, I can guarantee you the show will always have great laughs, catch up on life's in relatable ways, and have a ton of fun. We're recruiting you.
We are the One Stars, which means we can ask the questions that no other podcast asks to guests like Joey Chestnut, Evander Holyfield, Bobby Hurley, Jenny Finch, Ryan Lochte, Montel Jordan. New guests every week, compelling interviews that you want to hear. Check us out wherever you get podcasts, One Star Recruits.
Yeah, most of it was Saudi Arabia. It's just a shame that we can't see them fights in this country. They're undisputed. We've got great stadiums, we've got TV networks, and there you go. We build them up, and we're talking about boxing a problem, but they're going off to Dubai or Abu Dhabi for them type of fights, and the general fans here don't really get to go or can't afford to go over there to support them. Some will, and they'll have a good turnout, but it'd be good at Old Trafford, and it'd be good at Wembley, or good at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, it'd be absolutely terrific. Bob Arum and Frank Warren suggested not that long ago that could still maybe happen. And the longer it takes to make, the nearer we get to summer. Although Frank wasn't scared of going to Spurs in December, and that worked out okay. But we won't keep you much longer. But speaking of undisputed, neat segue. It doesn't really look like we're going to get to see the fight between Tasha, your fighter, and Terry Harper for all the belts. And where you're just shaking your head, is that completely impossible?
Yeah, that's just no point talking about that. That fight will never happen.
It's a shame, though.
Well, not really. Tasha's beat her, and I think it's a shame. But I think it's Natasha's stories to tell. She will tell it at some point. But it isn't just as simple about it's a belt and a fight. The way Natasha was treated, it's personal. And you just can't do that to a young woman with a child. And the way that she's treated, and it just wasn't right. So that'll never, ever happen. Natasha Jonas now is unified, three belts. She's the ring belt. And she's achieved everything she needs to achieve. And she's got another good year left ahead of her. And we'll see what happens. So, yeah, that's it. Like you say, there was an opportunity for that fight to be made straight away, and everyone called for it. I think Boxing News had it as one of its fights of its year and everything else. But no one wanted to do the fight. No one wanted to give Natasha a second bite of the apple. And then they put her in with Katie Taylor, expecting her to get done good and proper. And if you look at the scorecards in that fight, Natasha Jonas is the one that's come closest to beating Katie on scorecards, 96-95 twice. I think the other one's 96-94. So there's a round or 1 point either way. Do you know what I mean? So she did very well, and that was it. Then they all thought, that's it. There's no more from Natasha. So she's come back very well, but it's been a fantastic year. And Terry Harper will have to go and do whatever she's going to have to do.
Yeah, I picked Tasha as my fighter of the year because three fights in a new weight division, three world titles, won them all. I mean, it's very difficult to do any better than that.
Two of them in 10 weeks, Ander.
Yeah.
People get two in 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And the second one was the biggest challenger of the lot, Maria De Kerr, southpaw, big.
Strong.
And I mean big, strong. Done the distance with Chrissa Shields, acquitted herself very well, and for the ring belt on the line, and to have won in Liverpool and then get a phone call and 8 weeks out go, yeah, come on then, let's go and do it. And the gamble paid off. I think that's it. We talk about people fighting regular and often. Some of the men could have looked at that for an example.
I mean, her story's pretty. It is pretty amazing because, I mean, I was commentating against Vivian Obernauf, and given what happened there and given the age she was at the time, it was hard to see a way back from that. And then she just kind of ticked over and then got the opportunity against Harper. I mean, do you think that she's... Maybe she is getting there with the recognition. Do you think she's celebrated enough?
No. I think there was a huge opportunity this year. If you can't get nominated for a BBC Sports Personality of the Year awards this year, when there's no Olympic year, and the success story that she's had, and her being a mum, and if she hasn't got to get an MBE, CBE, OBE on the back of what she's done this year, yet other athletes did, and I don't think had much of a comeback story as us Natasha Jonas, then I don't think she's ever got to get it. And that's a shame, really, because there was no one more deserving of it. It ticked all the boxes. So I'm really disappointed. But the thing with Natasha Jonas, as you said there, she got beat by Obernauf, came back. We had an unbelievable camp for Terry Harper. It was COVID and we locked down and we were in sync. And Natasha Jonas was very driven. She's very dedicated, very driven and very passionate. And her steeliness, she's got absolutely a steel backbone in her. She's got a killer smile, but don't be fooled by her and her dedication, her faith in her ability, her trust in me has paid back dividends. And I said to her in the gym yesterday how hugely proud I am of her, to think a year ago we were getting ready for Namus for a first one, and we sit here now with the ring, she sits there now with the ring belts. So there's talk of all the fights at the moment, but you can never write Natasha Jonas off. But her story is complete now. And I think I've seen Liverpool City Council, or they're going to honour an award, her and her sister, Nikita Paris. Do you understand? And that's a great story. Two girls. We talk about the Williams sisters, and I'm not making comparisons, but you've got the Williams sisters there in Liverpool, but you've got two sisters there from Toxteth. One's playing for the England Lionesses, and one's a world champion. That's an unbelievable story. How is that not in every magazine, everything going, how is that not pumped out all the time? I think that they've just missed out on a huge, massive PR thing there with Natasha and her sister.
Finally, what would you, in an ideal world, what would happen with her this year? Because the beauty of the female side of pro boxing is that you'd know more about this than me, but as I understand it, and she's proved it by going super feather, lightweight, super welterweight, physiologically females are more capable of doing that than than men. So it means there's a lot more options. A rematch with Taylor would still be doable, I would imagine. There's Clarissa Shields, there's I mean, who if you could pick,
well, if I'd pick, what I'd love to do would be lovely. It would be Katie Taylor. That's, we were so close that night, and that was behind doors at the Manchester Arena there behind us. To do that though with a crowd, now Natasha's profile, Miss GB, all everyone from the Northwest there, supporter Katie Taylor, a bit like Quig Frampton, like that arena would be rocking for that fight. It really, that they could do that like an all women's card too, just compared to Savannah and Tasha and Chris. Now, there's an F for Tasha and Katie, but that'd mean Katie would have to come onto Sky to fight, or if it was to happen, it'd have to, Tasha'd have to go to Croke Park on the zone for it to happen. So I'd really love that fight. I think that's unfinished business. And people say, oh, be it once. But they said that about Pacquiao and Marquez for years. And in the end, do you understand it? Eventually, you're just getting that little bit closer and closer. And because of who Tasha is and the belt she's got and Katie has now, I think it could be a really good fight. So I do think that there's obviously Clarissa Shields, Cecilia Brackhouse, Jessica McCaskill. There's all them. They're all in the mix. So we'll just have to wait and see. But it's... like everything, at the end of the day, it's who's willing to come over and want to box in the Sky.
Okay, Joe, thanks very much. We'll let you go. Yeah, no Macklin. No Macklin. I think Macklin's tech listeners are probably still reeling from the shock. This is only the second one that we've ever done without him. The other one, actually, Clarissa Shields was on that one. Clarissa Shields and Hannah Rankin. He couldn't come because he had a bit of a cold, and responsible man of the years didn't feel that he could take that into a gym, which was the right thing to do. And he has a very solid reason for not being here this evening.
No, but, yes,
anyway, it's always good to see you.
Yeah, no, thank you for having
we'll
me
get
on.
You back on.
And listen, well done getting doing a comms job with Sky and that as well. You're always good on the undercards every time we listened. And like you say, now you're doing the main events as well, which is good. And are you pleased with it? From stepping up from doing comms to the main events now, was there a bit of, oh, I've got to be polished here now, because you've seen on social media and online how much the abuse can fly in?
Not really. I wasn't, you know, I felt like, you know, I had a long stretch where I was doing, yeah, the undercards for the domestic shows, and doing, every now and again, I'd do the main event and then the main event for quite a lot of the overnights. And then about kind of October, November 2021, I decided that it wasn't really right for me to be doing undercards anymore. So I very tactfully kind of sidled away from Sky, went and did my own thing, decided that it was just main events only from now on. And, you know, circumstances, you never quite know what's going to happen.
No.
And I'm loving it. You know, it's great. I really relish the kind of responsibility of it, if you like, and the opportunity to do it. There's nothing like it. I mean, tomorrow night with Liam against Chris, you know, that's going to be...
Would you say that was one of the biggest fights that you're calling?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I've not done a box office one yet. I've not done a pay-per-view card before, so that's one of the biggest ones, yeah. I mean, some of the really big ones I've done have been overseas fights. All radio, Fury Wilder 3, Fury against Dillian White. So, no, it's been great, you know. It's God, it's boxing as an industry, whichever bit of it you're in, is so unpredictable.
Do you look back on people that have gone by in the past? Harry Carpenter, Reg Guttridge, and then you go to Ian Dark, and then you're into Adam Smith and John Rowling, and do you look at their work and pull bits from it, or you're just going to be you and this is me?
You've got to do it. You've got to do it your own way. You have to find your own voice and your own style, and that basically happens over a period of time, because it's one of those things. It's true to say of almost anything that the more you do it, the better you get at it. But commentating is definitely one of those things, and the more you do it, the more you find your own kind of groove in terms of, you know, vocally, and also you work out. You self-edit, you become better at self-editing, you work out how many words you could fit into a space, pace and delivery and tone, all that kind of stuff, you know, it gets to you bit by bit. And Darkie was always my guy, because when I was a kid, if you like, I don't want him to feel too old, but in the 90s and when he was doing it and when I was watching boxing, and it wasn't like I always wanted to be a commentator, it was a kind of a decision I came to, you know, after university really, but I always just thought he did the kind of timbre of his voice and the way he called big moments, I thought was brilliant. Yeah. I really like Al Bernstein over in America. He's more of an analyst than a commentator. Jim Lampley, I was always a fan. You know, there's a few, but it's great.
Mike Costello, listen, I've been in his presence when he's worked and he's called it for radio. And you're like, wow, that's just, I'm in the room there of someone who's great at what they do. I'm sure when he's gone then to have to do and call a fight on TV, he's had to change a little bit, because when you're doing radio, you're describing everything in the room. You don't have two of this. And that's why I always see people always like Reg Guttridge and Harry Carpenter, because less was more. They could see it, so they didn't have to talk as much. You could hear what was going on in the corner. But then Reg would go, oh, he's really putting the shots together now, Jim, isn't he? And that's it. And it's just when you watch them great fights, we're on about the Four Kings, Reg is always there in some of them commentaries, and you just think, yeah, sometimes you've got to remember, people are seeing it, we don't have to describe everything, and just add your what you have to add.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And you know, the difference between radio and TV, because I do radio for Talksport, yeah, it's really basic. In radio, you've got to be there, everybody's eyes and ears, so you have to describe literally what is happening, and it frustrates me when I listen to the radio and whatever sport it is, and they don't really do it, because it's become a bit more of a thing to kind of have a conversation around the match and not really describe second by second where the ball is. It really gets on my nerves. So that's what you have to do with that. So it is different making the switch, but you, I'm completely with you. Less is more. You don't need to talk all the time, and that's something I think you get more used to the more you do it, or at least you should, because particularly corner sound, you can't talk all over corner sound.
I was just going to say to you, we've got a great fight Saturday night. It's got to be interesting to hear what Roy Jones Jr. is telling Chris Eubank Jr. and what Joe Mack will be telling Liam Smith in them championship rounds. In America, we hear Virgil Hunter talk. We hear Teddy Atlas and Fireman with Ted Bradley and all that type of stuff, and Emmanuel Stewart of Klitschko and Lennox Lewis. And sometimes, after a tough round, you want to hear what the corner's saying, but it'll break to an advert. Or if they don't, they're talking over, and it's, oh, please, just let's listen. And it's just be in the moment. Just feel the stress, the corner, the panic, or the excitement of what's going on. And that's live, just listen to it. They're moments that no one gets privy to hear, really.
Yeah, exactly. It is absolutely about like keeping everybody as in the moment as you possibly can. And if that means you shut the fuck up and don't say anything, then that's what you do, because it's not about you. It's about the spectacle. You're just hoping to make it more enjoyable for people watching. Mm. But the chances of you doing that by talking constantly are practically zero, I would say. Mm. And corner sound is... It's this massive privilege that you don't get in basically any other sport. You'll have a stump mic in cricket, but they'll deliberately kind of turn it off in between balls. I think that's what they do anyway, so you can't hear the sledging. Yeah. But in the corner, you hear it all. And people get frustrated when we have to apologise for swearing, but that's an Ofcom thing. You just... Yeah. I get it when they say, but this is boxing and it's 10:30 at night and what do people expect? But unfortunately, you just have to do it. It's just one of those things you have to do. But corner sounds great. You know,
you've got to understand how that corner works. Some corners, they'll go back to the corner and there won't be no dialogue for the first 15, 20 seconds, but it's composed, calming down. But then last 20 seconds, what are they telling them? What are they going out to the ring to do? That's what you need to listen into. Do you understand? It's like...
Yeah, totally. I was talking to Damien Hughes not that long ago. We got him on the podcast, me and Matt, and his old man was Brian, obviously. We were talking about the psychology of it, because obviously he's a professor of psychology and psychiatry, I think, and he was giving us an example of what he thought was just maybe the best bit of corner work his dad ever did, and it was Robin Reid when he won the world title in Italy, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And it was just after like 6 or 7 rounds, he gets back to the corner, takes out the gum shield, gives him a drink, like you say, doesn't say anything, just lets him breathe, and then just said, okay, sit down on your punch. And that does it all, doesn't it? Because it's technical, but it's also telling you. He's basically just set your feet and start hitting him harder because he's ready to. And when you know, that's it. It's so simple. And you hear stuff like that, it's gold, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is, mate. Like I said, Brian Hughes, a legend round here in Manchester, what he's done. And like I say, he's still carried on the work now with Pat Barrett. But like you say, sometimes it's just simple. Virgil Hunters seems to be a guy, when you watch his fights with Andre Ward, keeping everything simple and not overcomplicating things. Then there's sometimes people, I'll be guilty myself, like to talk too much and try and drill stuff in. But then there's other times, but it's good because you can learn a lot in the corner to see, well, that's what the fight is. What's the trainer seeing? Is he seeing the fight going different than what we are?
Matt Clynn, Matthew,
is there any chance you can jump on here for a minute, mate? It is your podcast, son.
You could jump on for the last 5 minutes. This is highly irregular, but here we go. This will just prove you can explain to people what's occurred here.
Where are we at with the combo?
Well, we're just
doing a bit of filming down in Nigel Travis, my side fire station. We're just kind of teeing up the some of the classic fights from the Top Rank archive, which we put out on Sky. So. Didn't mean to stand you up, Joseph. But
it's no problem. Spencer Oliver stood in for you for half an hour or so. Then Spencer's never short of a word or two. So it was good.
Yeah, it was good fun. We were just finishing off talking about commentary and corner sound and you know, listening into the corner and all that kind of thing. And I've asked a few people this. I don't think I did ask you. I don't think we talked about this really. I know you've got to go, Matt. But is the last thing you say to them before they leave the corner, is that what they'll remember, do you think?
No, I don't. I think what you've done in the gym, you've done in the gym. So it only needs one or two words for them to go, I know what you mean. You're in sync, you know what I'm saying? But usually when they're going out, I always say, don't do anything silly. As in, like, don't do anything. Don't drop your hand. But usually it's kind of, remember when we're doing, right, that's it. What about, yeah, that's it. Tasha, last time she fought round one, she was brilliant. Then, like, 10, 15 seconds, I was like, what's that about? She did something, and when she came back to corner one, what's that about? You're brilliant for a minute and 40 seconds. What's all that about? And she's like, I know, I'm right, go on. Switch on. Don't be doing, I call it a butterfly effect. Don't be looking at the butterflies around the room. Do you understand? Stay focused and stay vision.
Do you know what I think of it a bit like? You know, years ago when at school we did this play, like a drama play thing, and if you know your lines and that, but if you forget them, there'd be someone off stage that could prompt you. Just go, you know, whisper the word, and you get the audience won't be able to hear it, but you could hear that person prompt you. They're prompting you, like, the work's done. If you think about it, you come back at the end of a round, your heart rate's probably possibly through the roof. You know, you want to get your breathing back, you want to get a drink of water in, get up ready for the round in 60 seconds. Like, you know, how much can you really get through to some, you've got to. Now, listen, don't get me wrong, a little look or a certain phrase or look, come on now, or whatever it is you say, I don't know, I'm just generalising here, but it's already got to be programmed in. Do you know, it's like when you're training, what you're doing every day, you're programming the body so that when this happens or this situation happens or this shot comes or he throws that, this is what you can do. That's what drills are. Mm. Drills are just repetition. You're programming the body so it can react certain ways. If this happens, I can react to that. Because in the moment of a fight, you ain't really got, you can't really think about it too much. When I say I was a thinking fight, yeah, he's thinking, but these thoughts are happening at almost like light speed. You know what I mean? You ain't got time to like sit there and actually analyse it. It's, you know when they talk about
they become habits. They're your habits.
It's like a fighter when he's retired or shot. He might only be 32 years of age, and he might be brilliant on the bag. He might even be able to still do his personal best times on the track, but his reaction times are just, or he's hesitating that split second too long. In other words, you hear people saying, he can't pull the trigger anymore. He can't pull the trigger. All that means is he's a minute of a split second. Takes him longer to compute it. He's seen it. His brain's thought about it or hesitated for that tiny fraction of a second. And now the opportunity's gone. And the fact that he took that split second to think about it means he can't pull the trigger. That's what they're talking about. So in the gym, when you're going on through the pads, you're going through all these things, aren't you? So you've already programming the body for what you think might happen in the fight. Like Joe will watch hours of maybe a fight where he got beaten. The opponent got beaten in that fight, or he maybe had it was a close one, or that fight had a lot of success against him. How did he have success? What did he do? What was he getting caught with? Mm-hmm. You know, and you pinpoint, and you're like, okay, we think, and then, you know, you sit down, we'll talk to the fight, all right, we think this will work. So you go through it. So I remember when we were fighting Felix Sturm, we looked at, look, he's great with these singles, he's great with doubles, but he never goes again and goes again and goes again, you know, first phase, second phase. So we were thinking, well, look, every time he's great with these singles, but, you know, if I answer him, if he hits me with two, I'll hit him with four. If he hits me with four, I'll hit him with eight. And he won't be able to beat me because everything he goes for, I'll make sure I answer him back twice as much. And I felt we did that on that night. And those were the tactics, and that's what we did.
5-0 up after, you know, five rounds.
And so, but what I'm saying is, it's not about me or that fight. What I'm saying is, we're going back to what we say in the corner. Like,
I'll pick you up on really one. I'll pick you up on when you fought Wayne Alcock. We had practiced touch up, touch down, right hand over the top, and Matthew had been out. He'd been fainting and been fainting. And we've seen Alcock sometimes could be low with the lead hand, and Matthew came back to me. I think it was at the end of what round did we beat him in?
I think, no, around at the end of the first round, I said, I want to knock him out, because I could see everything he was doing, and I just knew, do you know, and he said, not yet.
Yeah. And then we went back, and I said, right, let it go, and then it went boom, boom, bang, over, and that was it. So, like I say, it's too late to be a coach on fight night in the corner. The work should already be done. It only needs a word, a prompt, a drill, a code word, anything like that, yeah, and the fighter knows.
That combo, that thing there, that whatever you want to call that, you know, that three shots or whatever it is you work on, you know, you're on cue, aren't you? You know what I mean? You can't start explaining the fight in between the rounds. You know what I mean? You might be that busy trying to get your heart rate down and breathe, or you might be pissed off with yourself because you had a shit round. So maybe then the trainer's like, come on now, forget about that. If you can see I'm moping on that last round because I had a bad round, it's like you got to kind of shake him out, that fighter out of it, saying, listen, no, can't be feeling sorry for yourself now. That's been and gone. Snap out of it. We've got another round here. This is a fresh start, you know. Every round's a fresh start, isn't it? Unless you drop badly and you wobbled and you're sitting down and you're trying to recover, then you're trying to tip cold water on his head and get him into the fight. But, you know, or maybe in the last round it could be close and it's about motivation. Could be motivating them. It just depends on what's happened in the round before, doesn't it? But you can't. I think there's no point bombarding a fighter with too much information when you got like 60 seconds.
No, not at all. I call it 40 seconds, 10 before and sit down and 10 to go up. So you've got really 40 seconds work with them in the cut man's time to keep your head still and everything else. So, yeah, you've got to be short, brief and direct and clear instructions.
But you know, through boxing history, we've all watched the great fights. There's a few moments where you think, you know, look, how good of a trainer in the gym was Angelo Dundee? Don't know, but he was a great cornerman. You know, remember the time when with Sugar Ray Leonard and he said, you're blowing it, son, you're blowing it. You know what I mean? Another time he just said to him, Ray, all I want you to do is box. Like, how simple is that? But, you know, he doesn't have to talk him through the punches, what he needs to throw at me. He knows what that means. It just means relax and let it flow. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're trying too hard. Yeah. You know, and that's probably one of the simplest mistakes, but the most common that all sports people make. If you try too hard, you tighten up, you tense up, you lose the flow.
I also feel, Andy, before we move on, as a coach, you have 40-50 seconds to get your point across. There's huge pressure on you to make sure you're giving the right stuff and you're seeing it right. So in the gym we work on half minutes in between rounds, but that half minute allows me to tell them what to say, the right thing in the sparring, because that's all the time I really get, 30-40 seconds in the fight. So that, as a trainer, allows me to get the point across. I haven't got a minute's rest. It's 30 minutes to make sure that the fighters understand I can get the point over in that short time, because I'm not going to get that on fighting. Does that make sense? From that point of view, and little things in a gymnasium like that helps mould a coach as well, that they understand they have to get a point across within 30 seconds. We've been in the wild card all the time, 30 seconds rounds in there. So you've got to come back and you've got to tell them within 30 seconds, this is what you need to do. So you have a luxury on fight night, sort of thingy, but you're letting them breathe, calm down, and then prep them, get ready. But you've got 30 seconds of clear instruction that they know that they can take on board.
What I also think is good with the 30-second rest in sparring is good. One, you get used to bring your heart rate down and from a fitness conditioning point of view, but then when you do get a minute on the night in the fight, it seems like a long time. You know? You've got a long time, then you think, oh, actually, panicked and got my breath back. We've had the instructions and we're all right, we've got a few more seconds here.
And TV have gone to the corner, nothing's been said, and it's like, come on, speak someone.
No, I think like we said, it's always interesting if you do go for some cooler sound and it's silence, that in itself is interesting enough. I never thought of that basically in the gym with sparring, that is a useful kind of training for the trainer to practice that. But that makes complete sense. So last thing, Tomorrow night, we've got Eubank against Smith. By the time this goes out, the fight will be over. So we'll play a fun game. Let's have a prediction from the pair of you and tell me how it's going to happen as well as who's going to win. And then by the time this is broadcast, we can see if you're right.
Do you know what it is? I think Liam Smith is a better all-round fighter than Eubank. In this, you know, he's cuter. He's got better repertoire. You know, he's good at chipping away. I think what Eubank is a good athlete. You know, he's got a solid chin. He's tough, you know. He's a good volume puncher. He's got great fitness. His boxing IQ, I don't think it's as good as Liam's. But you know, I don't know what Liam's got left. He's had a few hard fights the last few years. That fight in Russia was a tough fight. Those fights are miles on the clock. Also, it's not just miles on the clock. He's earned a nice few quid the last few years as well. So his hunger won't be what it was. I think he's got a couple of kids now. Other things in life are more important now than
where becoming domesticated.
We've got to bring Rocky III in, haven't we? We love a Rocky III quote. And, you know, I live alone, I train alone. He was a killer, weren't he? Mr. T. Club of Lang, he was a killer. Where at that stage in Rocky's career, he wasn't anymore. But when Rocky fought Apollo Creed in Rocky I, he'd have gone through that brick wall. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
But that's it. Mickey shouting at him. You got civilized, Rock. Worst thing that could happen to a fighter.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, Liam might be civilized now, but Eubank. But I think Eubank is less of a factor being civilized because he was always civilized. Mm. You know, he's trying to quiet a different voice in his head. He's got the people saying, he'd be nothing if it weren't for his old man. He's got those voices in his head that he needs to silence. You know what I mean? It's a bit like he's another film. Do you remember in the film Silence of the Lambs? And he's a psychiatrist. He's so clever, isn't he? The Hannibal Lecter. And he's saying to him, he's trying to get into her, isn't he? He's trying to understand what's driving her. Because we've all got driving forces, haven't we, in life? And she talks about when she was a kid and she got out and they were slaughtering the lambs and the screaming of these lambs. And he goes, yeah, well, you think if you can save this person, It'll stop the voices in your head. And well, you know, Eubank will have voices in his head of people saying, you've never been nothing, you wouldn't. If your name weren't Eubank, you'd have been nothing. So he's got those voices to silence. So him becoming civilised is probably less of a thing.
Yeah. So who are you picking? this goes out after we've done
that. Yeah, do you know, look, Liam...
You don't have to.
There's too many sort of variables that I don't know the answer to. I don't know what if Liam was the same Liam that fought Canelo, which he definitely isn't. So it's just I've already kind of undone my answer. It's then I would pick Liam probably, but you know he has had hard fights. He has earned money. I don't know. We're up at middleweight as well, and even though I know Liam might be more comfortable at middle because he ain't got to kill himself to get down, you know he is boxing a guy who's also been at super middle. George, you know, George Groves, a big super middleweight. I was just walking around the corner with him there. George Groves, a big lad, and a massive puncher. You know, and Eubank, you know, he took some big digs in that fight, and he was coming through. So, you know, look, Eubank might, anyone can get hurt to the body, but I don't think Liam's going to hurt Eubank to the head.
Mm. I've got to. Tricky. My heart can't rule my head.
Yeah,
but I know what Liam's capable of. I've seen him over the years. Come through, fight at welterweight, then light middleweight, and then his last couple of fights for me were middleweight. He had a good win in Mexico, and then he had a good win in America. And I said to Liam, "You're a middleweight now. Forget that. On you go. Aim for Triple G." And it was a part of the ways. And then, like Matthew said, he had a couple of fights back down at light middleweight. I don't think he was that impressive against Fowler. I thought they didn't have no fear factor. I thought he got hit too often, too much early on. But Liam knew Fowler was tight of the way and he'd eventually get to him, and he did do. He can't be like that on Saturday night, get hit too regularly, too often. Both of them have had cuts, but Liam's been cut. I don't think there's been a fight recently where Liam hasn't been cut, most probably his last one. Then after that, then he had Vargas. He won, but it was like treading treacle. It wasn't Liam on fire. I think at 160, then you've got to see Liam now back to how I've seen him at the end of it, with that bit of snarling, with that bit of confidence. He's not fighting thinking, I don't want to blow myself out. Do you understand? He's full foot to the floor. I think what's gone on this week at the presser and the weigh-in, has just fueled that intensity with Liam. Liam's got to keep a cool head. I do feel there's a Liam Williams 2 performance in Ian Smith. I think he'd really outbox Eubank Jr. I think he's a better boxer. He's a good amateur. He's got good pedigree. And I think he's all around better defensively-wise. But Eubank Jr. is a hard man. I seen him here at the arena when he fought George Groves, and he was swinging there at the 12th round. He took a right hand full on in round two and didn't budge, and he was still swinging the two hard men. But I think the more finesse, the more accurate punching, the more consistent punching lies with Liam Smith. And I think his boxing IQ hopefully comes into play with this, and at long last he'll be given credit for being one of the best inside fighters this country's had, because I don't ever think he's been given the credit for that. He's just been seen as a hands up, come forward type of fighter, and Liam Smith's a lot more than that, and he's got the platform Saturday night to go out there and show everybody that. But I've said to Liam, I said to Joe Matt today, he's got to be wary of Eubank's uppercuts. His uppercuts are very spiteful. You've got to remember Yildirim, a solid operator, blew him out. James DeGale ragdolled him all along it. If Eubank gets into his stride and fancy it, but the key to beating him is boxing him. Billy Joe outboxed him. When he turned it into a fight, it was Eubank's game. George Groves outboxed him. Once it got turned into a fight, Eubank got back into it. Liam Smith has got to keep his boxing skills intact, and I think he'll win. It'll be a close decision, but I think he'll win.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, but I think the best thing for Liam is if Eubank comes out and tries to box. I think if Eubank comes out and looks to have a fight straight away, then that's, you know, you're having 12 hard rounds then with a younger man who's fresher and naturally bigger.
I think Chris as well, coming forward, he isn't the best coming forward. With Marcus Morrison, when we fought him, I said to Marcus, as soon as you step back once, Chris will come on his second attack. But if you move your feet back a second time, he shuts up. You're bringing him into no man's land because he carries his head too far forward of his front foot. There's too much momentum in shots and he's in no man's land. So step back twice and Chris will shut up. So if Liam Smith boxes and as Eubank comes throwing the wild swings, you come out of range with them two steps, Chris shuts down and he'll retreat back. As he retreats back, then you go and counterpunch him. And I think as long as they've done the training right and the right shot selection, it is there to counterpunch him and frustrate him. Then Chris is going to have to come for the fight then. And at some point, this fight's going to ignite. And it might take 6-7 rounds for it to ignite, but it's going to ignite at some point. And then it's just a case of buckle down and let's enjoy it.
If I was advising Eubank, I'd be saying to him, don't try and box Liam Smith. He's too, because Liam's too clever, I think. Mm. I think I'd say, you're bigger, you're fresher, get out there and make this fight brutal straight away and back yourself to be the fresher, bigger, younger man.
Yeah. I can't wait for it. Well, we'll know by the time this goes out what has happened. And if Liam Smith gets a win, then we'll know what's next too, because Eubank's got a rematch clause. And if it's a great fight and we get to see it again, then I certainly wouldn't be complaining about that. So this hasn't ended up being the second Macklin's take without Macklin, because he's rode in at the end, right at the very end, to give us a neat little cameo. Joe's been with us all the way through. Thanks very much for that. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was the first one of 2023. We'll have plenty more for you this year. Don't know exactly when we'll be back. Maybe next week. It might be the week after. In the meantime, take it easy, everybody. Yes, that line falls on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in town.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.